Tiger Brands interims were always going to be about the listeriosis outbreak and its impact on the firm and its handling of the crisis, but I also find the great bread deflation debate quite interesting at the moment. But as expected, first half profit really took a knock from the fallout of that deadly listeriosis outbreak. It was traced to the facility in Limpopo. The outbreak has claimed more than 200 lives so far, and I'm joined now by Tiger Brands CEO Lawrence McDougall. Evening, Lawrence.
Hi, good evening, Michael.
Now, just to retrace what happened, we go back to October of last year and the NCID first alerting the public to cases of listeria linked to meningitis. We then had the health minister confirming the outbreak in early December. And then early March, the health minister came out and said the outbreak was traced to your Limpopo factory. You obviously came out and responded and at the time said there wasn't found to be a direct link yet. But you did initiate a nationwide product recall on the back of tests that were to be confirmed. And obviously those did firm up that it was traceable back to the Limpopo factory. Considering the timeline and roughly 4 months that passed since the outbreak first came to light and that first week in March, I mean, obviously one cannot expect you to act immediately. There's testing processes to follow. But do you feel that you acted as quickly as you could have to prevent further loss of life, or are you implementing systems to respond perhaps slightly quicker in future if this happens again, which hopefully it won't?
Yeah, Michael, so let me just retrace because some of the comments weren't entirely accurate. So on the 4th of March, the minister did convene that public announcement. And he made announcement that listeria had been traced in several factories, one of them being our Polokwane factory. At that stage, and a few hours after the announcement early on the Monday morning, you know, we went out and were very public by the fact that we had been implicated. But at that stage, we had no information at all. We'd received no documents other than a one-pager to recall three products out of our entire range. So what we did as a management and leadership, we decided to immediately recall all of our products, not just the three products that the Department of Health suggested. We immediately shut down our facility so that no further product can be produced until we had further evidence and knowledge and details of what exactly we were dealing with. But that was all in the interest of our public health to be able to move very, very quickly. So, you know, if the initial announcement was seen to be, you know, less detailed than everybody expected, I apologize for that. But it was all we had at that time. And the interest, you know, and the speed that I moved at was definitely in terms of public health. So, unfortunately, I didn't have any more information at that stage. Where we are at the moment is, yes, as you would have picked up in our announcements, we have found SD6 in one product that we produce in the Polokwane plant, and we did find the Listeria SD6 in one part of the facility. There's yet been no direct link on that specific strain of SD6 is indeed linked to any of the people that the DRH or the NICD have indicated to have fallen ill. So that's the last bit of the puzzle that has yet to be put in place. We are working very, very hard with the regulators, with the DRH and the NICD to make this information available so that we can move with pace and the sensitivity, obviously, that's required in a very serious incident like this. So we're doing our best to move forward, but at this stage, that tangible link has not yet been fully ascribed to our product.
And that link would be a burden of proof to demonstrate that a consumer who died from consuming listeria-infected meat would have had to prove that they have a tool slip proving that it was one of your products and not another product, or that they hadn't consumed any other meat product. I mean, what is the burden of proof here?
Yeah, so what we're trying to understand is the NICD has quite clearly said that they have this information. They've interviewed several of these people, and they have done the collected isolates from the individuals, and they have evidence that the strain that's in our factory is indeed the strain that was in these individuals. So You know, all we're asking is that we get this information as quickly as possible, not necessarily the patient's personal information of who they are and what their names are, but these tests and the linkages to our factory. As the DOH has regularly said, you know, listeria appears all over the environment, and there have been several other recalls in the industry at the moment. So, you know, we just want to understand that if it is indeed our product, we can move with the speed that we need to move, understanding that there is that direct link established.
If we were to draw lessons from this, even at this early stage, in future, would it be better if we had the authorities, the Department of Health, the Centre for the NCID, communicating with industry players far sooner than perhaps they did initially? Because if you look at the date of the initial outbreak, October 25th, when the NCID came out, If it had been working proactively with industry, one would have assumed that one could have acted far quicker.
So I suppose that's one of the objectives we sort of advocate in going forward, Michael, is that, you know, if we have food science, the regulators, the food industry all working collaboratively together, understanding the progress getting made in food production technology, understanding what's happening with further developments within the food science, understanding these bacteria, and then having the Department of Health working closely with us, understanding what's happening, you know, within the environment of the consumers. You put those powerful groups together, we can stay ahead of this. And, you know, my biggest challenge would be that we're playing a role to make sure that this never happens again. Mm. Yes, there's no doubt we need to resolve what has happened and what's gone by. And we're trying to do that as sensitively and fast as we can. But I think, you know, as a leader of this business and, you know, as a contributor to 25% of this industry, you know, we would want to make sure that we are doing the right thing for the future at the same time. And that, you know, these people can work together as leaders and keep the industry ahead of what the consumers would be expecting in terms of food safety.
And I think that is at least one positive that one can try and draw from this.
Absolutely.
This whole sad affair is to improve and tighten up systems going forward. Now, you've obviously closed your Enterprise Foods meat processing facility. You've recalled the products such as polony from supermarket shelves. All of those measures have so far cost you around about 365 million rand. That's ex your insurance claims. What are you anticipating on the insurance front and in terms of any further losses as a result?
Yeah, that was the amount net of a 50 million insurance first payout. So going forward, we've said that the ongoing running costs of these facilities is about 50 million rand a month, and that we will incur until we open the facilities. And then obviously we need to understand what the ongoing demand for our product is going to be and what, you know, that level of sale is going to be going forward. So that's what we sort of anticipating costs would be until we open, that level of 50 million a month.
And you've given a timeline. Was it September, I think, you said in the results that you're expecting to get that factory open again?
Yeah, we haven't given direct indication yet. I would like to get them up and running as soon as possible. But, you know, we've got lots of work to do understanding the impact to the industry, to the brand. And we're doing deep consumer research at the moment, trying to understand exactly what those dynamics would be. The other is, you know, that we are hoping by the time that we are ready to open our facilities after the refurbishment and the retraining, that there's a new industry standard that has been promulgated by the government and industry experts. You know, that would be the ideal situation. And I would be very, very cautious to be able to indicate any opening without those new industry standards being very, very clear.
No, absolutely. One can't gaze into a cracked crystal ball there. Now, you also face potential legal claims from the victims' families. What sort of contingency are you setting aside for that?
Yeah, so a class has been registered. It hasn't been certified. We do not have details with that. Our legal teams and insurers are actually working very, very hard to, you know, move through this with speed. And Richard Spoor and his legal team are collaborating with our legal team to move to that very quickly. The details of what that looks like, it's far too early to understand, you know, exactly what the quantum is within that. We have said publicly that we believe we have the appropriate insurance for an incident like this. But until the, you know, the exact details of that class have been certified, it's quite difficult to anticipate. Now, unfortunately, I can't give you much more than that at this stage.
No, one understands where things are in terms of the process. If you look at the rest of the business now, Lawrence, pre-tax profit from your continuing operations was down 18%. But if you exclude all of these abnormal product recall costs, your pre-tax profit still fell 2% to $2.3 billion. So the rest of the business performing a little bit better, but still a miss, still under a lot of pressure, group volumes down, and deflation accelerating as well. So you're in the eye of the storm here, so to speak. How are you seeing things from this point on? Obviously, that's a bit of a backward-looking snapshot.
That's correct. Yes, so as I said, the deflation was quite significant. You know, there was about a 2.6-2.7% impact from deflation, most of that coming through maize. And as you know, the maize price has fallen quite dramatically over the last 12 months. Looking forward, we think that deflation is going to steady. What I'm applying my mind more to, though, is consumption. And, you know, what's the impact of the additional VAT going to do to consumption over time?
Mm.
And therefore, you know, we need to perform at least as good as the market is. And we've seen some positive moves on consumption in some of the categories. You would have seen our snacks and treats business did well, our beverages business did well, and overall in grains, particularly in rice, we had a very good performance as well. So some of the categories are starting to show some energy, and we need to be, you know, ready to take our share of that as we move forward. But I think overall trading is still going to be very, very tough in the second half.
And if you look at it, we've had an environment where bread prices have actually gone negative, and that hasn't really happened very often on a 20-year view here. So that's clearly great news for consumers, perhaps not the best news for the likes of a Tiger Brands or even your competitors, Pioneer. Pioneer's numbers showed that their own deflation was about 1.8%, not as bad as the category as a whole, which was down 4.8%. So it would seem that someone's cutting costs really aggressively. You've often said as a management team that that's not your strategy. What's your own bread deflation?
Yeah, our bread prices have been pretty stable. We've had 2 or 3% in the category. We're pretty happy with our volumes. You would have seen our overall grains performance was good. Our margins held up really well. We've done a lot of good work on the quality of our bread, and then we think that's, you know, holding up our brand equity. While at the same time, a lot of the inflation that is seen is pretty much in the retail industry. So, you know, making sure that we keep our bread prices at a competitive one versus our other industry players is pretty important to us. But it's about the strength of our brand, our route to market, and obviously the quality of our product.
Mm.
As, you know, one of the leaders and the biggest market share, you know, we pride ourselves that the quality of our product is really up there and demands a slight premium to our competitors.
And dealer-owned brands have been a big theme. We've just seen Libstar come to market. They play very strongly in there. Consumers obviously looking for value. It's always
correct.
Said that when the economic cycle turns, the consumer sometimes trades back up to their preferred brands. What are you expecting on that front? And back to, you know, a reference here to what the big food retailers like ShopRite are doing, it does look like they're also getting very aggressive with their in-store bakery offerings to keep you branded guys honest on the bread front.
I'm sure they would. And I suppose that's the power of competition. Yeah, you know, dealer-owned brands has had a good run. I think it's on the back, mainly on the back of the strong rand, more so than driven by consumer personally. That has allowed, you know, dealer-owned brands to import products and get on shelf very, very quickly at very competitive prices. I think when, you know, you see the rand turning, you see dealer owned brands pull back slightly. They are very strong in some categories and not as strong as others. And usually, you know, the brand leader and the house brand sit comfortably alongside each other. And it's the, you know, number two and three brands that usually take the most pressure. So we're quite proud that, you know, we the number one brand in most of the categories that we participate in. We need to understand that the house brands or dealer-owned brands are, you know, serious competitors, and we treat them as such. But, you know, hopefully the work we do behind the equity and building our brand health will stand us in good stead through these times when the consumer is looking for value.
And obviously, branding is a big part of what you do. If you have tier one brands, it's about reinforcing the messaging. And I think a very interesting comment to come out of the webcast this morning was that you're moving heavily into digital marketing and advertising because that's where you're finding you're getting better traction out of all of the media out there, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, it is definitely one of the vectors of our media. And digital is, you know, it's accelerating at a rapid pace. And, you know, you just have to look at your own children or people in your household with the time they spend on their mobile phones and the time they spend online. And therefore, digital marketing is becoming a far more prominent media stream for us to pursue in future.
Well, Lawrence, we're going to have to leave it there. All the best for the second half and putting what has been a very tumultuous period behind you and hoping the industry and all the role players can learn from this so we can also avoid any further loss of life in the future if there isn't, or if there is, I should say, another listeria outbreak. Yeah. We hope there isn't. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Michael.
That was Tiger Brand CEO Lawrence McDougall reporting back on probably one of the toughest periods for the country's largest food manufacturer. Stay right there. We're going to be talking all about the African Free Trade Agreement ahead of Africa Day, only on Classic 102.7.